The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance. BTL, coming at you. Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Monday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Hey, I'm flying solo this week. The Grasshopper, Matthew Pengrack, he is on week number 3 of his September/October adventure. Week number 3 at Lake of the Ozarks for the final Costa regular series event, of which I know he hasn't had a whole lot of success during these first two events that he was at. He had a, 50th place finish last week, and then I think he finished 35th in the Federation or the Nation event that he was in at, Lake Eufaula. I got a good vibe about this week. There were some things took place during the last couple of weeks that sometimes even the golden child has to experience the adversity that sometimes this game throws out at everybody. And the last couple of weeks, very, very challenging for Matt, but staying very positive. And I believe he's sitting in 14th in the points in this Costa division. So a lot on the line, but I think he's done his homework. He's put a lot of effort into getting ready for this event. So I feel really good about what he is going to have from a business standpoint this week on Lake of the Ozarks. All right, so what we're going to do this week, we're going to kick things off. Bradley Holman en route to the U.S. Open. Next week, things in Vegas kick off for what has got to be the most jam-packed U.S. Open that Billy Egan has had in a number of years. Some big, big names coming to play next week in the desert. And Bradley is en route to Lake Mead today. So we're going to get him on live via the phone, and he's going to talk about his solid performance on Grand Lake. And when you look at the standings, folks, you know, I talk about the HFA, and I've talked about the HFA for a number of years on this show. It was a who's who of Grand Lake. Mr. Kurt Warren getting it done, and he didn't even have limits on two of the 3 days, but his specialty, fishing out, trying to catch the big ones. Hey, he got the hardware, he got the check, he got the accolades, and that top 10 was absolutely loaded. Bradley finished fourth, so we're going to get him on here just in a few minutes and talk about his performance on one of the bodies of water that he knows better than the back of his hand. Then tomorrow, folks, this is where I need your help, all right? I really need your participation on this. We're going to open up the Sunline Hotline with myself flying solo, and I want to hear from you. We will talk about anything that you want to talk about. All you got to do is call the Sunline Hotline tomorrow. I love doing these shows. I love hearing from the fans. And whatever you guys want to talk about, whatever's on your mind, hey, we're going to talk about it tomorrow on the Sunline Hotline show. Then on Wednesday, as I mentioned, Mr. Bradley Holman en route to the U.S. Open. We're going to have the man that makes things happen, Mr. Billy Egan's going to be on live via Skype on Wednesday to talk about the money that this man is going to give away next week to the winner. $100,000, a boat, a bunch of accolades, a bunch of just all kinds of stuff being given away in Las Vegas next week at the U.S. Open. And then also, I want to let everybody know, we will be doing BTL next week from the U.S. Open. Matt will not be there, but it will be myself, our good friend Dan O'Sullivan, and then Dave Rush will also be anchoring the coverage next week. So we will be doing live BTL, live U.S. Open coverage. I don't know if we're going to do anything on the water yet. We're going to try. We're going to at least try and get Billy on the water. He is going to be on the water next week, and then we'll try and get some reports from Billy. But myself, Dano, and Dave will be hosting, anchoring the coverage from the hotel and from the live weigh-in site that we have each year. I think this year is going to be the eighth year that we're going to be doing this. So that's kind of how we're going to play things out over the next couple of weeks. And then once we get back into normality after the U.S. Open, we will get back into the regular flow of having Matt and I in studio with our guests. I know we want to get Scott Canterbury on. We want to get Seth Fieder on. The other thing I want to let everybody know, I've been doing a little bit of homework. Man, this week, I'm going to tell you right now, this week was one of the most challenging weeks for me. And I don't know how many people out there have ever had this experience of thinking that your appendix or your gallbladder is going bad. That happened to me this week, and I was at the ER. They couldn't figure out what was going on. I was puking. It was miserable. It was a great week to have best of shows, and I guess timing's everything, but I was enormously sick this past week. Feeling about 70% now, doing much better. Did not have to have gallbladder surgery, did not have to have my appendix taken out. But kind of a scary thing when you go to the minor ER and the guy looks at you, the doctor says, hey, you need to get to the ER in a hurry. Your gallbladder is about ready to bust. Not the case, though. They do a CAT scan. They do, what is that procedure? Some other procedure. The same procedure that they do when they're trying to find out what sex your baby is. What is that called? I went totally blank, and I don't have Matt here to cover for me. Anyway, had that done and spent a few hours in the ER last week, but all is better. No surgery required, and we're going from there. The other thing I want to mention real quick, I know there are a lot of rumors out there about what is going down in this crazy world of professional fishing with so many of the tours and the trails. And, you know, is FLW going to be purchased? Is Major League Fishing going to do it on their own? What is going to happen in 2020? I do want you to know that while I was sick last week, I actually did talk to a number of people, and I want to squash a couple of things here. One, there was a rumor that was flying around that Boyd Duckett was going to retire. That he was going to retire and he was going to strictly focus on his business, all right? I have absolute 100% confirmation that Boyd Duckett is not going to retire. He is going to be fishing next year and from what he told me, a number of years after 2020. So that rumor right there can get squashed. The other thing I will say, and I do not, this is just me, really analyzing and taking a good look at everything that's going on in the industry right now from a business standpoint, from an angler standpoint, even from a fan standpoint, that I truly believe that we're going to have some resolution to this whole situation of the status of FLW by the end of this month. So over the next 2-3 weeks, I would be shocked that if we do not have some type of direction on where this thing is going over the next two to three weeks, because there are so many factors that are involved just from a business standpoint, that either the trigger's got to be pulled on this thing and it's going to happen, or somebody's got to make a decision that they're going to do this thing, Major League Fishing, on their own. Right. That is my interpretation of all the information that I can gather. And based upon what I've seen from the status of kind of where so many companies are from a sponsorship standpoint going into 2020, I truly believe that we're going to find out something over the next 2-3 weeks. And then hopefully we can move forward and everybody can start to plan out what their game plan is going to be in 2020. So what it's going to be, I don't know. I have no idea. Obviously, a lot of rumors flying around there. But what I do feel highly confident is that a decision and direction is going to be delivered within the next 2-3 weeks by the end of October, and we go from there. All right, the other thing I want to mention real quick, then we're going to take a break, come back with Bradley, is I got an opportunity to watch the first Major League Fishing BPT on the Discovery Channel, and it was kind of interesting. You know, it was kind of quirky to look at it from a perspective of, well, number one, you knew who won. Number two, you knew what happened. Number three, you saw so much of the footage from the live coverage of the event. But one of the weird kind of things that the weirdness that I possess is that there was not that stage shot of the drive-through where they do the post-game show. It was a celebration on the water. It was kind of an explanation by Mr. Jordan, Jordan Lee. And then they just kind of cut away. But a lot of the same shots, a lot of the same stuff. Still pretty good information. And from a production standpoint, top quality production from a TV standpoint to get that stuff in there and the way that the story is told. But it's kind of weird. Just my opinion, kind of weird watching it when you knew what was going to happen and you knew the results and you knew the drama, what a little bit of drama there was in that first event. But all in all, kind of cool to see it. I'm not really sure about the time slot. Saturday mornings, you know, that's been done for a zillion years. And we'll see, man. The mission is to try and spread this game to people outside the fishing industry, getting it on channels like the Discovery Channel and other non-outdoor channels. So we're going to wait and see what happens on that. But I thought it was quite interesting what happened. All right. By the way, it was kind of cool to see Jason Christie battling it out on his home body of water at the Costa. So we're going to take a break, come back and talk Grand Lake with Bradley Holman and get his take on everything that went down at Grand Lake last week in the Costa. So I'm flying solo today, folks. I really, really hope that you guys will take a part in what we're doing tomorrow with the Sunline Hotline show. That show could be so good if we get enough callers to talk about whatever you want to talk about, folks. That's what we're going to do tomorrow. All right, taking a break, coming back with Bradley Holman. Everybody stay tuned on a Monday.
Are serious about catching fish, that HDS is a dead giveaway. You've got the best fish finding sonar money can buy. Time to build the ultimate fish finding system with live sight sonar. See what your lure is doing in real time. Watch fish strike as it happens. See for yourself. Take the live sight sonar 30-day challenge. If live sight sonar doesn't help you find and catch more fish, send it back, no questions asked.
Gamagot's the G Finesse Series. In my opinion, the G Finesse Series is the only lineup of hooks you need for any fishing you do.
But I know a lot of guys haven't used this hook yet.
G Finesse Series has the nano coat on the hooks. And the nano coating makes the hooks sharper, smoother, for a better hookup ratio.
20% stronger than black nickel. Wow, that is incredible. That's a lot of strength.
My Gamagot's G Finesse Series, perfect finesse fishing for you.
Check out the G Finesse series of hooks by Gamagatsu.
The heart of the Basscat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Basscat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Basscat. Feel the rush.
Guys, Gerald Swindle, Sunline Pro Staff. If you're a flipper, a slack line hook setter, you're really putting a lot of impact into your hook set, look for the shooter. It comes off the smooth, really smooth. Like when you're flipping, it is smooth. If you're going to be drop shotting and cranking, sniper's the deal, man. It seems like it's a little bit less likely, like on a sharp hook set, it don't seem like it likes it as much, but for coming off the spool on spinning rod, leaders, cranking, like if I'm gonna throw a big plug at Gunnersville, I've still got strong tensile strength that's not gonna give out on me, but yet the line's thin enough for it to get down. So to me, shooter takes a hook set, snipers for everything else. So if you're gonna slack line them, go shooter.
The name SPRO says it all. SPRO stands for Sports Professionals. When you look at the pro staff that SPRO has brought on board over the past 15 years, it's been pretty incredible. I mean, one got it just then. From the development of the Rock Crawler to the McStick, from the Fat Papa to the Little John series, when you tie a SPRO bait on, you know it's been designed by a professional to get the job done.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
At Duckett Fishing, we have assembled the top pros in the country to help us design rods to give you a competitive advantage.
Castability, strength, durability, action, sensitivity, weight and balance, and consistency.
Combine that with the best warranty in the industry, and you have rods that are pro-driven.
Duckett Fishing, pro-driven.
Hey guys, Cliff Perch here with AFCO. I've got the new camo hooded Reaper. It's gonna be a great thing both for fishing and hunting this fall. I can tell you a couple of the features about it. Got the face mask like all the Reapers do, vented in front. It's got the fleece on the inside, so it's really comfortable. It's super warm. When you come down to the pocket, it's got this little snap system called Block Tapey, and it's silent. You know, it doesn't make that sound that other snaps and other systems that hook it together make. Great for hunting, and it's gonna keep that stuff in your pocket.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole down.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water, day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
All right, I am back on a Monday, kicking things off, flying solo. And we are about ready to go to our special guest en route to the U.S. Open. A couple of things real quick. No, Matt is not fishing the U.S. Open this year. Logistically, he said he just couldn't get it worked out. So he is not after the week that he is spending on Lake of the Ozarks this week. And then the other thing is, I appreciate it. I could not remember what that procedure is called. It's called an ultrasound. That's what it is. I'm an idiot. Anyway, time to talk a little Grand Lake fishing, as we do a lot here on the show, with our good friend who is one of the top guys on that body of water. And he showcased it once again last week with a fourth place finish in the Costa on Grand Lake. And a plethora of superstars in this area that perform at the highest level on Grand Lake. And Bradley right up there with everybody else up there, that just a who's who amongst people that dominate on Grand Lake. So let's bring him in now. Bradley, you there, man?
Yes, sir. You hear me?
I got you, man. All right. Appreciate you taking time. We know you're en route. But, you know, a lot of people out there may think that I'm crazy. But when you look at that leaderboard, you tell me, is that not a who's who amongst people that dominate on Grand Lake?
It really was. You know, Kurt Warren is probably not a name that people outside of Oklahoma are going to know, but he and John Filcher, his team partner, have totally dominated that lake for the last 7, 8, 9 years at team events, big championships. They won a boat a week before the Costa event there on Grand Lake, and had won by like 7-pound margin. They catch big fish. They fish offshore. That's all they fish for. They spend a lot of time doing their work with brush piles and things of that nature. It paid off for them this week.
You know, in setting this thing up for today, Brad, you mentioned something that really kind of caught my attention. And there was a gentleman, I believe he finished, I don't remember where Alan Head finished. Was he in 11th? Is that right?
No, Alan Head was in the top 10. Daryl Robertson was in 11th.
That's right. But what you said about Warren and Pilcher, about Alan Head, who's in his 70s now and who has dominated in the Grand Lake area for so many years, has kind of passed the torch on what Alan has done for so many years on that body of water.
Absolutely. absolutely, and they're doing it a lot the same way that Alan did. Alan's not a bank fisherman. He fishes offshore. He fishes for the bigger bites, and these guys figured out where they are and how to catch them. And you know, it's been a learning curve. They started fishing pro-ams a few years back, and you know, you'll see them. I know during the Open, we go back to that. You know, the same Kurt Warren had 18 pounds the first day in the Open, and then he blanked day two. It's a double-edged sword out there, especially when you're by yourself, you know, and you're trying to catch five without a team partner. It's a little bit of learning curve for them, but they're getting it down for sure.
All right, let's talk about your week. How did it start off in practice? What was the approach that you decided to attack a body of water that you're so familiar with the conditions that were out there for this past week?
Well, you know, Mark, I was real excited to go back up there. I'd spent a lot of time with the Open and the BFL, so I had got to spend more time on Grand this fall than what I normally have in quite a few years. And the lake had fluctuated again since the Open. It had rained and gotten high and gotten 2 or 3 feet high again, and then had started to come back down. Was getting lower, but what happened with that drop in the water so quick was they pulled that mud line out of the river, and I knew that that mid-lake section, I call it the sailboat region, sailboat bridge is the middle part of that lake, and I knew that it would have more water color than what it had had during the Open. And that really going up was my game plan, was to focus in that area of the lake because of that water color. First day of practice, I stayed in that area, and without a doubt, I felt like it was the right move. And then day two of practice, I went down lake, and I got off into Duck Creek, and I had some really good bites that were just really, really nice fish, 4.5, a 4. I saw another 4.5 try to eat a frog underneath a willow tree. It just really got me excited, and it changed my game plan for the event. And third day of practice really wasn't very productive at all. And so then I had to make a decision. Am I going to stay up around the sailboat bridge area, or was I going to go down lake? And day one, I decided to go down, and I went down there, and it was not successful. I caught 1 3.5 pounder. And the problem with me going that far down the lake is I can't just come back to the sailboat bridge area. I've got too many places to fish. So to make a long story short, I think I got back to the sailboat bridge area about 1 o'clock, and I had one bass in the boat, and that was it. And somewhere between 1 o'clock and weigh-in, I was able to catch 13.5 pound bag. And, you know, that was a big day. Have I still got you, Mark?
Yeah. You know, some of the stuff that I've seen comment-wise from some of the other guys that finished in the top 10, it seemed like the afternoon was really the key to their success. A lot of bites happened in that afternoon bite session.
Well, you know, after I got back up there at that end of the lake, that was the time of day that I got bit, and I needed it. I was fortunate to catch it, and I knew after day one that I wasn't going anywhere else. I was staying there, and I felt like I could catch a better day two than what I had day one if I stayed all day, and I did. But on day two, when I was in there, by 10 o'clock in the morning, I had seen 3 or 4 of the top 10 guys in that big area of the lake, and it is a big area, but I was running around checking a bunch of spots in there, and I knew then that I had really, really made a critical mistake, because day one was the day to really make a move and do really well, because those fish were kind of more untouched, you know, at that point. And day two, they'd been picked over a little bit, and there was still some left, you know, but it was more of a grind. Grand Lake was really, I mean, overall was an extremely challenging tournament, just because we'd had so many tournaments up there over the last month, and those fish were really, really had been pressured heavily. And the fluctuations of the water levels and things, it just really made it a very challenging lake, which I think is also why you saw more of an HFA on Grand than you normally see. Grand's usually such a good reservoir that, you know, like we've talked about before, we talked about after the Open, you know, those guys came down from Wisconsin, I believe, first and second place, and allows them to flourish there just because there's so many places to be successful on Grand.
Were you surprised that Warren did what he did with, you know, 2 out of the 3 days he didn't even have a limit?
No. wasn't surprised at all. It's very, very much what he's been doing for the last 3 years in pro-ams. His team partner, John, actually said to me in the line at the open, he said, I've got to learn how to catch the 14-inchers because he was standing there with two or three really nice fish, and he just needs to finish off his limit, you know. It's tough when you're standing there with three fish that weigh 15 pounds, and you know that just two pounders gives you 19. I mean, that's what he's after. But they have to spend so much of their time out there trying to get that 4 and 5 pound bite that it's taking a lot out of their day, you know. There's not a lot of time for them to run places to catch smaller fish.
So besides the obvious, Bradley, when you decided to make the move and go south, and then, you know, I don't know if you mentioned what time it was or how much time you gave that area down at Duck Creek, but is that something just from experience that you decided this is not working, or was it the amount of time that you spent that things just were not panning out that you said, look, I gotta make a change? What was it?
I had a gut feeling in the beginning not to go. But if you'd have been in the boat with me in practice and saw the fish that I saw, you would say you gotta go. But my gut said no, and so when it didn't fire, I gave it 3.5 hours. And when 3.5 hours and I didn't have them, I mean, I knew it wasn't gonna happen. I had to get out.
What was, of course I have to ask this question, what was the topwater bite like?
It was spotty like every bite that was out there. It was hit and miss. It was the home run, you know. Jason Christie came in the first day and had that, and guys, I mean, I can't describe to you how phenomenal that day was. He brought in 22 pounds. The man had a 7-pounder and a 6-pounder and a 5-pounder in one bag. I mean, there's not many people on the planet that can do what he did the first day of that event. And he said he caught the 7-pounder on a buzzbait. So, I mean, I can imagine, you know, at places at the right time, the topwater bite was phenomenal. But there were also guys that threw it the majority of the event and weren't successful. It was very spotty.
All right, what did you have most of your success doing?
I caught some fish on a buzzbait, and primarily I was flipping and throwing a square bill, and I would say 80% of it was flipping for me. Flipping wood, flipping docks, just anything I caught that was, you know, something that had been productive either before in the past or looked right for that lake level. We were really watching the lake level. I mean, we're talking tenths of an inch here, 2/10 of an inch. It would come up overnight. And it was enough to hold fish in really shallow cover. It would fall 2/10 of an inch, and it would move them out to some lay-down type stuff and, you know, dead wood, log jam type things. It just kind of depended on the day, but I did a lot of flipping and a little bit of square billing. That was primarily my go-to stuff.
All right, I want you to be honest, Bradley. How cool was it having Jason there competing against Jason?
Grown up with Jason, and we grew up. It was great to have him back. I mean, I told him at the gas station that the first day I ran into him, and I said, dude, if there's anybody I'd rather be chasing, it's you. You know, I mean, there's nobody I would rather be chasing than him. So I was glad that he was there. I was glad he showed out that, you know, the first day. And, you know, that is what I always call the freak show bag. That was it. And, you know, it was fun to chase him. If we're going to compete up there, we like to compete against the best. You know, Toby Hartzell finished third in the event, and Alan Head and Lawyer. And it was, like you said, it was a lot of the guys that I competed against on Grand for a long time. And we all kind of talked about it in the bag line on the last day. And it was cool to have all of us back up there.
What was the vibe? I mean, I know a lot of those guys you know, they've been a part of FLW for so long, and with the unknown that's taking place in the industry right now, what was kind of the vibe, especially having, you know, Jason back there? And just, was it, you know, was it the elephant in the room, or was it that everybody just kind of didn't even talk about it?
You know, we had Elite Series guys there, we had MLS guys there, and we had FLW Tour guys there. And I can tell you, you know, that all of us are kind of in the same boat. We're all just anglers at the end of the day. And I think we're all just tired of the rumor mills. we're done talking about it. We need to see a press release, see what's posted for next year, and then we're all going to make our decisions and go from there. You know, at some point, all the talking and the rumors don't really matter. I know that I personally feel that way at this point, so let's just see what comes out, what's there for us, what's available, what suits each angler is going to be an independent decision, personally, and guys are going to do what they think's best for them in their career. But we can't make those decisions or really talk about any of it until something's, you know, published.
No, you're exactly right. All right, I want to go back to last week at Grand and ask you this. And I ask this question a lot, but because I think people learn from this question. If you could go back and change anything, even though you had a fourth place finish, what would you change from your performance last week? Would it be that day one decision that you made to run south and go to Duck Creek, or what would it be?
Absolutely, it's day one. Day one's where I made my biggest mistake, no doubt. If I stay in that area all day, then my chances of catching that 18 to 20 pounds goes way up, way up. I messed up. It was the wrong call. And it was going to be very difficult to come back and win that event after that mistake. I was very fortunate to finish in the top five after that mistake.
Can you get specific? I mean, you don't have to get that specific, but is there anything that people pick up on from so much experience in that top 10 that really makes a difference on Grand Lake? We talk about the LBJ, the little brown jig. Is that one of those things that if you're going to fish Grand Lake this time of the year, you better have one of those tied on?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were some guys that caught fish that way. I know that that's what Matt Panger was doing. And Pangrat told me after day two that he had the opportunities to have a really good day on day two in his execution. You know, boat cables and dock cables and things like that really got in his way, and he lost some fish. But, I think that just the grind of understanding that middle portion of the lake with the water color is what helped most of the guys that did well in that event. Understanding how to fish it, had fished it in the past. Some of that stuff that's productive is really ugly water. When I say ugly water, I mean ugly because it's not appealing to the eye, and those fish live in some of those places this time of year on Grand, and I think that's really what showcased last week at Grand Lake.
You know, Frank in Michigan, he had a question up here, and I'm kind of going to take a piece out of it. What do you define your skill level at, Bradley? We all know what kind of a shallow water angler you are, but do you like fishing deep? Have you taken the time to actually improve your game in fishing deep, or is it something that you're just not even going to mess with?
No. I'm so well-rounded that it's almost a fault to me. There's been many times in my career that I'm out fishing deep or doing other things that I should have probably just been on the bank or fishing shallow. But I am so well-rounded and worked hard at being well-rounded my entire life that, I definitely enjoy fishing deep. You know, before the Open started, I fished a BFL up there, and I went all in on the deep fish. I practiced for them for 3 days and did not do well in that event. But, I definitely like all types of fishing. I'm not just a shallow water guy. But it does seem that, you know, my wheelhouse seems to be shallow. But, you know, I won Lake Lanier, and I was sitting over 80 foot of water. So, but I did have a lot of visual targets. I feel like I definitely fish it all, and I feel strong at all of it. But it does seem that most of my success does come from usually a flipping stick or a spinnerbait in my hand, no doubt.
All right, let's talk a little bit about success. You're on your way to Lake Mead, the U.S. Open. You had a good year last year at the U.S. Open. What are your thoughts on this year? And how much pulling out of the boat and putting into the boat did you have to do before you made the trip?
That's one thing that you would think would be a lot. And the honest answer is I hadn't touched nothing. After I was here last year, I don't fish deep. I power fish on this lake. I feel like that this is a lake that I can win an event on at this time of year. and there won't be many spinning rods rigged up in my boat. I will power fish. I will top water, flip, throw a chatterbait, spinnerbait some, and swim a jig, and I'll do most of it 5 foot or less.
It's pretty cool that Billy Egan has put together an event, an iconic event, and a lot of people out there are well aware of the history of the U.S. Open. But with it being moved to the fall and the number of anglers that Billy's going to have in the field, over 250 this year, and first place paying $100,000, this field is stacked this year, Bradley.
It is. It is. Somebody told me last night that Aaron Martin's been posting pictures out there on Mead for 2 weeks. So he spent some time out here. Everybody's kind of getting ready. I'm excited to go. It's a great event. It was the most fun event I ever fished in my life. I mean, last year I enjoyed it that much, and I can't wait to get back.
All right. I do want to ask you this, and I have not asked you this question yet, but with everything that's taken place, the Open schedule came out, the BASS Open schedule came out. Any thought in possibly fishing all four Opens in one of the divisions next year?
Yeah, we've all got that thought in our mind. It goes back to what I said before. The rumors have got to stop, and we've got to know what we're doing next year. We've got to see it. We've got to know, I mean, what's going to happen? And then, you know, what's the format going to look like? What's the field size going to be? Who's going to be included? Who's not going to be included? And is it something that you want to be involved in if you are included? There's a lot of questions there that I can't answer until we know what the game's going to be.
All right. Russ on the instant feedback wants to know, how hard is it to adjust from going from Oklahoma to Lake Mead, tactic and fishing-wise?
Like I said, you would think, just looking at it on paper, that it would be very difficult. But for me, after being out here, it's not. I'm going to power fish this event, clear water or not. There are really good fish that live shallow on this lake, and that's what I'm going to target.
All right, man. You know, a lot of guys that have been doing this for a while, and I think a lot of people forget that, man, you have been doing this game for a while at every single level. Just about every tournament possible, you've been involved with it, Bradley. The windshield time that you have, do you get lost in that sometimes? And what I mean by that is, because this game is so mental, do you spend time on the phone, or is it this kind of meditation process where you're going through things that you did good, things that you need to improve on? I mean, how do you adapt to all the windshield time?
When I was younger, I would burn up the phone with everybody else. You know, the other anglers were driving also, and we just talked from one person to the next. But as I've gone through this, you know, I talk less and less on the phone. I listen more to music, and I listen to podcasts a lot. I listen to BTL. I do things that can help me, you know, in the long run. I'm always trying to learn. So, you know, that's something I do a lot. I would say just the drive, you know, like I-40 through Arkansas, dude. I've done it so many times leaving Oklahoma that I'm sick of looking at it. That's another great thing about this trip. You know, I just crossed over the New Mexico line from the Texas Panhandle while we've been on the phone. And, you know, it's a beautiful scenery, and it's beautiful to me because it's just different than what I normally see driving. So I really enjoy this drive out here to the West Coast. I always have. Lake Mead is only 16 hours from us, Mark,
yeah.
In Norman, Oklahoma. So, you know, Champlain's 20-plus, Okeechobee's 20-plus. So it's really not that much further. It's actually closer than some of the other stuff that I do. But I do. I've always enjoyed driving. I've always enjoyed seeing different parts of the country. I think it's one of the benefits to the job.
All right, man. Big weekend for all of us Sooner fans and Sooner graduates. Even though you're going to be making your way to Lake Mead, you're still going to make it happen and go to the OU-Texas game this weekend. What are your thoughts on that?
Isn't that terrible? I'm driving out here. I'm going to practice, and then I'm going to get on a plane and fly from Vegas to Dallas to go to the game. I'm obsessed, I know, but it's a family affair. You know how it is around there. My
yeah.
wife and kids are going to be down in Dallas, and I'm going to meet them there. Definitely Boomer Sooner, and Texas sucks, dude.
Well, I think there is a very, very good possibility that both of these teams, it's not going to be the only time they play this season. We'll see if they butt heads once again in the Big 12 championship, which may or may not happen, but likelihood is yes, because the Big 12 is just so weak this year. It really is, man.
It is. It is. It is. Hey, I got a story. You know, I always got stories after an event. One of the guys from Grand Lake, and he was calling or had a great event. He finished in the top 10. He came up to Matt Pangrack and I. We were sitting there talking after day one or two, and this gentleman walked up to us and was telling us he listened to the show, how much he loves BTL and whatnot. And so he starts telling us his story. He said, but now how I listen to it is a little different. He said, I'm not like most guys. I don't take showers. He said, I like a nice, hot, bubbly bath in the evening. And he said, every single night, he said he crawls in that bubbly bath and fires up his laptop, and that's how he spends his evening, is in his bathtub listening to BTL.
Wow. Wow. That's a first. I don't think I've never heard that one before, Bradley. Jeez.
Me, South Texas boys. Yeah.
A bubble bath.
Yeah. Couldn't wait till Monday night, so I hope you're enjoying your bubble bath tonight. We were thinking of you.
Wow. All right, man. I'm going to let you get back to taking care of business behind the wheel, being safe, making your way to Lake Mead. But great performance once again, Bradley. And as I open the show up, I think we're going to find out what's going to happen within the next 2 to 3 weeks, and definitely by the end of October. So let's keep our fingers crossed that we get some direction, that we get some real good indication on what is going to happen from the trail standpoint for 2020 over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys really needing that. We need it down on paper. We need it for lots of reasons. We hope it gets here sooner than later.
All right, man. Be careful, and I will see you next week when you get back from the OU-Texas game.
All right, Marcus. I'm glad you're feeling better.
All right,
see
man.
Vegas.
All right, man. See you in Vegas.
See you.
All right, there you have it, folks. Bradley Hallman on his way to the U.S. Open. So good way to get things kicked off, and kind of a stingy Grand Lake. We talked about it a zillion times, how many of the HFA guys were up there in the top 10, top 15, but a very tough. And some of you may be wondering, you know, Matt had 6 pounds on the first day, had 6 pounds on the second day, but he told me on day two that he should have had 18, 19 pounds. Had the fish on, but the area that he was fishing, concentrating on boat docks, getting in the most difficult, nastiest, you know, walkways, cables, all kinds of stuff that you had to battle the fish once you got the fish hooked up, and he just couldn't get them in. Got unbuttoned and broke off on cables and in these really kind of unique walkways that Grand Lake has. But hey, that's where they live, and that's what you got to do. But I really believe that he's going to bounce back this week. He's put in a tremendous amount of effort on getting ready for this Lake of the Ozarks event. Depending, obviously, what happens next year, he is in a great position to be able to qualify if there is going to be an FLW Tour in 2020 for Matt to be a part of that, if he puts things together and makes things happen on Lake of the Ozarks this week. All right, as I mentioned earlier, tomorrow, the Sunline Hotline Show. Really need your help tomorrow. If you're listening on iTunes and you get an opportunity normally not to watch the live show, hey, even if you can't watch, write down the phone number. The phone number is right there underneath on BassZone.com. In fact, I will put it on the instant feedback before we sign off today, to where even if you're unable to watch live, you can still call into the show tomorrow between 8:30 and 9:30 a.m. Central Time if you have anything that you want to talk about. I love doing these shows. I love hearing from the fans. I do want to mention right here, I have a message that was sent to me via email, and it's from, and I don't know if I'm going to say his last name right. First name Andrew, last name Fluhardy, I think is how you say it. But his email address is Drew Flew. Kind of cool is how he kicked it off. But I just want to say, Andrew, I'm not going to read it. There's about three paragraphs here. Probably the most meaningful email feedback that I've ever received in the 20 plus years that I've been doing this. And I cannot thank you enough for the kind words that you said in this email. In fact, it means so much to me that I'm actually going to print it off on a really, really nice piece of paper, and I'm going to put it in a frame, and I'm going to put it in my office, because that's how much the thoughts and the comments that you made about me, myself, personally, and then the stuff that Matt and I do on the show, I get it, man. It really made me feel emotional, and I can't thank you enough for the kind words, Andrew, from the email that you sent to me. All right, that's going to wrap Monday up. We're going to be back tomorrow, Sunline Hotline Show, and then Wednesday we are going to talk more U.S. Open with the man that makes things happen, talking about Mr. Billy Egan on Wednesday live via Skype. He's got to get up early. It's going to be like 6:30 in the morning West Coast time for him to be on the show on Wednesday. But very, very excited. 250 angler field, both on the pro side and the co side. And $100,000 plus a boat plus all kinds of other stuff going to be earned at the 2019 One Bass U.S. Open next week in Vegas. All right, everybody. Thank you. Hopefully I didn't do too many things wrong flying solo. It's really hard trying to produce, trying to host, trying to get the call set up, trying to do everything. So I try to do my best. I'm not perfect. I'm missing my little buddy to my right. Hopefully he will be back after the U.S. Open here in studio, and we will get back to normality. All right, tomorrow, Sunline Hotline. Everybody be safe. I'm out of here.